All right. That's Blues and the Abstract Truth, written and composed by Oliver Nelson. And this is played by Oliver Nelson and his septet, including Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, Eric Dolphy on alto sax and flute, George Barrow on baritone sax, Bill Evans on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums. Oh, by the way, that is from his album, Stolen Moments is the name of the tune, and it's from the album Blues and the Abstract Truth that was released in 1961. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. So, it's the day after, and we'll be talking about what you got out, if anything, what you got out of that debate last night, and what was noteworthy about it, and whether you feel like you're part of the process now that you have had. Yet another experience, another debate. Are you more informed? Are you more interested in voting? Are you more interested in the outcome? How do you analyze the performance last night? And what do you see ahead? Is it worth it pursuing this thing, or in terms of are we on the right track in terms of people that we believe should somehow occupy the highest offices in the land, that they'll do a good job, that they will get us where we ought to go, and that they have something special that they bring to the process? This is, of course, the debate last night involving Kamala Harris and Mike Pence, the vice presidential debate, occurred at the University of Utah. So we want to have you share your take, your own take, on what the debate brought to light for you, whether it was useful, whether it helped you understand a little bit better what is going on in this country in the midst of a presidential election, and whether it was worth even staying up for this debate, to watch it, to listen to what was being offered. I thought it was interesting, but for reasons that most people probably wouldn't think are interesting things to ponder. But let's hear what you have to say. What does the jury say about the much vaunted debate held last night at 888-874-4888. I'm not so much interested in who won the debate, in your view, but okay, if you feel that you need to comment on who won the debate, feel free to do so. All I know is this. I grew up in a small country, Trinidad, and in many ways it was typical of the Caribbean. And we really had a great appreciation for debates. Even as a child, we were required in our household to listen to governmental debates. We would be quizzed about them. We would be asked questions about them by our father, who was a kind of a political nut. He always was listening to debates. But only now, in my later years, am I appreciating the fact that it is an art and a skill that is very much appreciated in the Caribbean generally. And if you're in politics, it goes without saying that you know how to debate. I find myself being very disappointed time and again about how debates are conducted in the United States and how ordinary, and sometimes that's a compliment, debates tend to be. And, you know, they have a strange approach, a very different format, and you don't get the vitality from the candidates that you would get in the Caribbean. People get really worked up about their debates. And it's a kind of a spectator sport. People listening to debates sometimes way into the night when Parliament is considering one thing or the other, but you appreciate, as you grow older especially, you appreciate the art of presentation and how you bring your point across, and generally whether you can or will be able to demonstrate a certain capacity, a mastery of the language, and the mastery of persuasion. This is not particularly appreciated in the United States, and what people call debates here are nothing compared to the kinds of debates that we grew up with in Trinidad and throughout the Caribbean generally. It's a kind of spectator sport, but it's a very serious matter. And we listen very intently because we also are looking to see how skillful these people are at scoring points. 888-874-4888. We start off in Orlando with Tony. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
Last night's debate, the two most memorable moments for me were when the fly landed on Mike Pence's head and stood there for about 5 minutes.
It's the most talked about fly today, that's for sure.
And before that, me and my wife could talk about was Mike Pence's pink eye. He had a pink eye.
I didn't notice it.
Yes, we were looking at his pink eye because pink eye is one of the side effects of COVID. So we noticed that he had a bloodshot eye, and it looked kind of pink. And so that's all we were talking about until the fly landed on his head, and then we focused on the fly. And then we went to bed after the debate was over.
Well, did you get anything out of the debate that you found to be illuminating or useful?
Well, the biggest thing is how the candidates for the Democrat Party are not being very either truthful, or as far as what their platform is when it comes to a lot of the things that they've promised in the past. That's pretty much it. And I mean, Mike Pence is pretty much, you know, defending the liar in chief as usual. But I mean, that's we're already used to that. But Kamala Harris, she got pressed against fracking. You know, they said that they're not going to be against fracking, which is something that in the past they said they were against. And I forgot what the other issue was. There was another issue which they're flip-flopping on. So I believe it was packing the courts. They didn't want to answer that. And Kamala Harris would answer that if she was going to pack the courts or not.
Well, you know, that to me was what was the point of the question about packing the court? As if it's a new phenomenon. It just never happened before.
Well, what their point, well, Trump and Mike Pence's point on that is that what they're afraid of is the Democrats adding more justices to the court. That's what they're afraid of. And I believe that in the past they have done that, where they've had more justices. I'm not, but normally they've settled at nine.
Yes, but this obsession about the packing of the court, they introduce it as if it's something new. This is par for the course in political life. If you
Well,
are a Republican and you have a good chance of winning, and there's the opportunity presents itself that you can continue to live on through your appointments, that's what they do. So I marveled at this obsession about the packing of the court and being presented as a sinister action. All
because
candidates do it.
a lot of times what we see them doing is it's like with the with what they did with nominating the justice that they're going to put up now, and how they denied Obama back when it was during the election year. He had an opportunity to nominate a judge. They denied him that opportunity. You know, they talk like a, you know, a good talk, but at the end of the day, like it's like what you said, if they have the power to do something, then they can do it, you know. But normally they try to act, especially in the Senate, they have this sense of that they're a higher, more prestigious body than the Congress. So they have to go by a certain you know manner. So you know, and it is that manner in which they were talking about as far as packing the court. But we all know that, yes, if they have the power to do it, they do it. But a lot of times, the Democrat Party, that's my frustration with that part of the party, is that they normally, when they do have power, they normally don't do the things that they promise. They normally don't do it. You know, it's like, besides packing the court, one of the supposed threats was that if the Republicans went forward with their nomination, that, oh, they're going to pursue with making Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. a state. Well, what's taking them so long? Why now?
And why
You
is it being
understand?
presented as something that we should be terrified about?
Exactly. And why does it have to be used as a tool? The people of Puerto Rico have voted multiple times to become a state of the United States, yet they have not been made a state. The people in Washington, D.C. have been crying for, you know, taxation, you know, representation for your taxation, and they haven't been given that. How many times has the Democrat Party has had both houses, you know, the House and the Senate, and the presidency, and have done none of these things? These are issues that people have been talking about for years.
Yes, it suddenly appears now as if these were sinister, underhanded, you know, some kind of conspiratorial idea, and we should be cringing in fear that Puerto Rico wants or seeks to be a state. They've been after this for years, for decades, actually. So I
Exactly.
don't understand this notion of doom and gloom, as if, this is an issue crafted in a deep, dark cave by communists.
Exactly. And that's my point of last night, is that it seemed like as if Kamala Harris was, it's almost like she was already set up to be put in a box, because they keep twisting themselves in a pretzel. Oh, should we be progressive? Should we go to the center? Should we go to the right? They can't, these two nominees can't figure out where do they stand on their policies. And
Well, they
that's not
want to
good.
be everything to everybody, but at the same time, avoiding critical issues. And as I raise this question, I want to ask you, what was most glaringly absent from the discussion last night?
Wow, you put me in a big spot. I'm not that big of a thinker. The thing that was most glaringly absent. Wow, I think that's above my brain cells, Eutrees. I mean, there's a
Oh,
lot
no,
of
it
things that
isn't.
were
You talk about it all the
absent.
time.
A lot of things that were absent. Oh, God, Eutrees.
Just pick one.
I'm gonna have to pass on that one, Eutrees.
Okay, I won't press. I won't press. But you got us started in a very good way today. I thank you for being with us and sharing your thoughts. Thank you so
Thank
much,
you, Chase.
Tony. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
A few things.
You're sounding very low, the volume.
Is that better?
Only a little, but you
Okay,
need to speak directly
let me try to
into your
project more.
mouthpiece.
First of all, structural issues last night. Kamala fell into it also, but it was particularly egregious on Trump, on what's his name, Pence's part, in that not answering the question. I mean, just using it as a means to get in your talking points, especially Pence. You know what I mean? And the moderator, she didn't bring it back to the question, and not in one instance. I think Kamala, I would say that she handled, because the Democrats don't need to come out and say, "Yeah, we're packing the court." The form of the question itself is problematic. And Kamala turned it around and saw how they were literally packing the courts, of course, for their minority rule. That's all the Republicans can be about these days. And she mentioned about a tranche of 50 judges that, once they wouldn't let Obama put in his appointees, that Trump appointed without, mainly just with ideology, but in terms of the attorneys, bar associations, without competence or experience. And she mentioned that of those 50 judges, because they've actually appointed about 200, that not one was a person of color. Okay, so it shouldn't be thought of as a threat in terms of packing the Supreme Court, because you lose your constitutional republic when you have these Republicans insisting on minority rule. I love the first caller pointing out the fly that stayed in place, a big horse fly that stayed in place for several minutes.
Maybe he was stuck because, that is seriously lacquered here.
I
Hair,
think
I should
that's
say.
an important omen, you trees. And
Maybe the fly
also,
couldn't get out of his hair because there was so much lacquer going on there. But
really.
what did the discussion tell us about the thinking within the highest levels of government and the judicial process?
Indeed. I thought in terms of the highest level of government thinking, one of the last questions was whether each side would accept the results of the election. And I thought Pence, you know, just out of some facade appearance of propriety, he basically gave us the Trump answer and couldn't say yes. I mean, they know people are sick. I mean, you know, the fact that the White House now has 34 people with I'm not laughing at the sickness because that's not funny, but in terms of comparing to 19 countries, they have less cases than the White House. You know, so we're living in really strange and surreal times.
Is it kind of concerning that these are the things that are on the top of the discussion list rather than sharing with people a vision of what potential the country has of going higher and higher, and a more substantive discussion of what is hoped for, what will be achieved? Instead, we have this, you know, a kind of high school discussion on, well, are you packing the court? I could not in my wildest dreams believe that this is the level of discussion that people are having who presume that they know how to manage the highest levels of office in the United States. It was embarrassing, I think, when people are talking about, are you packing the court? And people want to know, and they did not in any way demonstrate a command of the understanding of the office that they intend to hold. And they never got to that level of discussion. They were just like kids in the playground, just trying to, you know, get a little bit of a fight in before the bell rings.
Indeed, I agree, and I got to hear your monologue on from Tuesday on the archives, and I think you get to the fact that we're basically dealing without substance. And one example is the wife of Pence coming on stage without a mask, and all of us saw the footage of the party for the nominee, their Supreme Court nominee, and then contact tracing. So the fact of without substance, I mean, it is writ large. It is writ large.
It is very scary. This is what is scaring me, that this is the level, and we dare not imagine it could improve at all. This is the level at which the country has come to become used to functioning and thinking. This is what is informing daily life and controlling our daily life, a level that is embarrassingly low.
Yeah, we're the laughing stock of countries like Vietnam and Vietnam, New Zealand, Taiwan. They have fewer cases than the hot spot now at the White House. So for people to think that he's going to protect any of us when they cannot even protect themselves is almost beyond something that you could imagine that would happen in any country, not to mention, the leader of the free world, so-called, and one of the most richest country on the planet. So go figure.
Yes, but there is no substance. I kept listening. I said, okay, maybe this next sentence would contain something of substance. Nothing. It's just schoolyard, your mama stuff.
Yes, indeed.
This is the level at which people are operating. And we dare not hope for improvement. We dare not do that. Thank you very much, Ma'at, for your call today. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Beatrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed. How's by you?
We're still hanging with the thumbs. We're still here.
Still hanging with the thumbs. I like to hear you say that.
That's all I got these days, really. I broke down and watched about half an hour of it. Then I went back to reading my book about China. It's like you said. I mean, we're in a situation where we've got wildfires that are affecting the climate 3,000 miles from where they start. We've got record homelessness. We've got an economic reset where people are wondering if they're going to be able to pay rent or even hold on to their homes. We've got small business, specifically in New York, is actually dying. And that was even before the pandemic. And now we've got this pandemic, which, not for nothing, has a lot of speciousness things that are going on about it. I'm not going to get into that, but all of these things and the level of conversation, because I won't call it a debate, the level of questioning, even from the debate moderator, have nothing to do with what's going on. They don't pertain to anything that I can see in my immediate future that you're saying you're going to help me. And this is a time for dynamic action. This is a time for someone to stand up and say, look, we've got to implement some changes in these things. We've got to implement some changes in the infrastructure. We've got to implement some changes in the economy. We've got to implement some large changes and we've got to take some bold steps and we've got to, there's going to be some pain, but this is what we need. And we don't have individuals that are capable of that. We don't have individuals that can't get beyond the sniping and the one-upsmanship and the cult of personality. And it's just sad. That's why I said, you know, you got to go hyper-local. You got to concentrate on your local politics. You got to do what you can for yourself and your community and just keep the faith with that, because these people have no vision. They have no perception. They're lost.
It was very scary listening to this thing that was happening before my eyes, and having to keep in mind this is a vice presidential debate. I would expect more out of a fourth grader or a fifth grader who knows how to stick to a subject and prove your point. But this is what is passing for leadership. I was not impressed with the Democrat. I was not impressed with the Republican. I was just not impressed with this. I was not impressed with the so-called journalist who moderated this debate. It was embarrassing. At a time when we need insightful leadership, you have people basically, you know, throwing spitballs at each other and getting involved in a level of discussion that has nothing to do or very little to do with what will the future or what does the future look like.
Exactly. It's like my grandmother.
They're not discussing these things at all.
It's like my grandmother used to say when we were kids and me and my brother would get in an argument or me and a cousin would get in an argument. That's small potatoes compared to what's going to happen to you in the future. You know, these people, they're obsessed with small potatoes. They're obsessed with small ideas. And this is not the time for that. We're going through a paradigm shift in this country and at this time. Lifestyles have changed. You understand? The way we interact has changed. And we're this country specifically is behind the power curve. China's taking over the globe. And the Asian tiger is positioning itself to be the largest force economically, militarily, and politically in the next in the coming decade and in the coming millennium. Xi Jinping is considered to be a statesman across the globe from an oppressive communist country. He's considered to be an elder statesman. He's considered in high esteem. You know, you got to look at the international news. You got to see what's going on, the big picture. America's getting ready to get cut out of everything. And these clowns are just facilitating the change.
Well, I tell you, we have reason to be concerned. Because so far, in these public presentations where we are supposed to appreciate the differences in approach, or the differences in their psychology of leadership, even, we are in trouble. If this is the best that this country can produce intellectually, philosophically, politically, we are in desperate trouble. We have a madman who's called the President of the United States. And as we saw last night, his deputy is not too far behind.
Well, I mean, I know what he was going to. He's got to back his. He's a subordinate. He's got to back his boss because Trump won't have anybody around him that's an intellectual equal that can challenge his limited ability to function. So everybody that's still in the White House is a subordinate, and they're under his foot. But the Democrats are not offering anything anyway. I mean, nobody got any vision. That's why I say we're going to have to learn to count on ourselves. I mean, whatever limited power you have to control your world, you got to exercise it and start to think outside the box. And these are not just cliches. These people do not care about what's happening to the common person. And it's going to come out. The world is going to leave America behind in the dust.
Well, I know one thing. If anybody has the skills and talents to teach people how you debate, it's a skill sorely needed because nobody seemed to practice it at all last night.
Pence, with his
passive aggressive agenda, trying to look like the quintessential good kid who went on to do well. It's just, the whole thing was just a farce. And I shudder to think what will become of this country under leadership like this. This is very sad. And I started off today talking about my little old country, little country. When you have a debate, even little children are listening to see what is the strength of your intellect. And it's easy to tell. There was no intellectual exchange going on there. There was just yammering.
I don't know how
they think that serves the public.
They can't have an exchange of ideas when you have no ideas. You can't conduct an intellectual conversation when you don't know how to think, when you don't know how to think critically.
I must admit, that's a point, a legitimate point. How are you going to have an exchange of ideas when you have no ideas? Thanks a lot, Ed. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. And I'm going to continue where Ed left off because I cannot begin to tell. You know, I started not to watch it last night, but then I said, you have to be informed, and you can't be informed if you don't watch. You know, a debate, people should not have the questions in advance for a debate, which is what happened last week. So I was happy to see that the questions had not been shared with either candidate prior before that, because the whole purpose of a debate is to see what your level of understanding of the facts is about anything. Why? because you are going to be the leader. You have to have a platform. You have to have an agenda. And you can't have an agenda if you don't know the facts about anything. Last night, you know, only the Democrats can fraud. They have all the answers, and they can't come up with the answer. Like, it's a cheat sheet. You mean to tell me, of all the issues that exist, Kamala Harris couldn't fashion one responsible answer? Fracking. Fracking is making people's well water go down fire, poisoning their water. And she couldn't even argue that. The economy. People are out of work. She couldn't even argue that. What could she argue? Nothing. Then wait a minute. If she is a heartbeat away from the presidency, we are in trouble. I want you to know, last night, I spent the entire debate in conversation with someone whose intellect I value and respect. And do you know what the argument was about? Her soror, you know, this support of Kamala, because, you know, by the sorority sisters, her soror was kicking Pence's behind. I said, are you serious, my sister? I am not impressed with her performance. And her sole argument was that, well, she's in a white environment and she can't come across as the angry black woman. I said, wait a minute. I just want her to recite the facts as she knows, if she knows anything.
Wow.
And it was clear she knew absolutely nothing. We are so in trouble. We are, my poor child and grandchildren. I am leaving them with a world that is turned upside down.
All I could think about, and you're actually reinforcing it in what you're offering today, all I could think about is, so this is where the country has come. This is what it has come to.
This is the best we got.
I could have walked in right off the street and have done a more creditable job.
That's exactly
in presenting ideas.
I said, I got the answers. If I got it, how come she doesn't?
Good Lord.
Oh, my God.
You sound like you're having a pity party here.
Yeah, it does. It does. I don't have anything else to say, Eutrice, today. I just don't.
Okay, but thank you so much. I always look forward to hearing what you have to say, because you have a very keen eye on how the world is working, and you often pull our coats to things we don't see, and we're not yet in tune with, but you have a habit. You cut right through the mess and you tell us this is what is going on. Pay attention to this. And I thank you always for being a sober point of reference for us. Today is no exception. Thank you so much. Let's take a little break and come back right after that to your comments and questions at 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're debating the debate at 888-874-4888. What did you get out of it, if anything? Please let us know. Please share. Maybe we missed a whole lot that you might have the answer to, but we're trying and we seem to be agreeing we didn't get very much. Daryl from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Yes, indeed.
A, you're right, it wasn't a debate. B, at least it was somewhat civil, although answering questions is not the point here. C, you ain't the audience, so whatever your expectations are, don't matter. They were talking. Well, for one, the vice president has to be the talking horse for the president. So whatever expectations you had about the quality of the answers you were going to get to Susan Page's questions had to be constrained so that they were in line with the president's or the person who's seeking the presidency's responses. So although Kamala Harris in the past herself has been against fracking, Joe Biden isn't against fracking. So doesn't matter pretty much what they say now. And as your statement that this is where we've come to, well, what was it in the past that explained the behavior of the last 45 mass murderers who have occupied the office?
Look, you're saying that you're having a debate. Both sides are saying you're having a debate. Automatically, that shapes my mind to expect a vigorous challenge of ideas. There was no vigorous challenge of ideas. There were very few ideas, as a matter of fact. And they were talking to themselves. They were not instructing the public as to why, you know, they've come to a point and you should look to them, whether Republican or Democrat, as at the very least a party and a leadership that is in tune with the challenges of the day and that has answers. That didn't happen either. I don't know what that was.
It was a job interview for a job that required you to speak to what you perceive to be the people who are going to be voting in this election. And so,
but they
therefore
didn't achieve that.
For you. For you.
They didn't achieve that.
What I'm saying is if you go to the Frank Lutz post-debate interviews with his people, or even if you go to Amin Abbas, the PBS folks who interviewed, you'd be surprised the kind of answers you would get from the Pence performance in upholding the rights of the unborn while disposing of the born. So what I'm suggesting here is that what the if someone says that they're having a sale and you go into the place that says they're having the shop that is selling something and you pick up the piece of merchandise and the price is twice the amount that you would normally pay in a different store, would you be surprised that this would be the sale price?
You know,
yes. The answer is yes. You say, I ain't
no,
paying
No, I'm
for
not
this.
Dealing. You see, I'm not even dealing with hypotheticals. We're beyond hypotheticals right now. We're dealing with the actual fact of a so-called debate that was held. And it is not a far-fetched idea that the people should have an expectation about the issues that are relevant, or that the powers that be should have an idea are relevant to the people. And you manage in 90 minutes to dismiss all of that and come up with some irrelevant stuff just to keep us occupied and to fill up your 90 minutes that reflect very little understanding even of your own job. We should put an end to this kind of stuff and let people know we're not having this. You want to waste your time, you can perhaps afford to waste your time because you're getting a good salary and life is great. We, on the other hand, are looking for leadership. I don't want to sit like we're in a classroom and you're discussing hypotheticals. We're grown people. And you should know, you should be very much aware of what your purpose was or is. And let's not stop playing these games. We should go on strike. We should not participate in something that continues to offend us, as if we can't think, or that they're doing a great favor by being available to us to ask some questions. But the whole thing is choreographed to avoid such a mission, to answer questions. I'm sick of it. I was far more concerned when I was a child. My father made it compulsory that we listen to parliamentary discussions. These are high-level discussions. And they weren't acting as if we're stupid. I was a child. And they laid it out the way anybody interested in conveying information to anybody, a child or an adult. That was the level of seriousness that we all had, the attitude we all had. Something was being discussed in Parliament. We all ought to know. We were not experts in governmental affairs. We didn't know any of that, but we listened. And we understood who had it and who didn't, who had the answers and who didn't have the answers. And if you didn't have answers, get lost. Go away. But this charade that we keep getting slammed with has got to end. You're not talking to idiots. And you know, nobody has to tell you how urgent the need is for clarity, for information. And you give neither clarity nor information. You're talking gibberish to yourself. It's a great disservice. They should not have had a debate at all. And there should have been, even in the preliminary situation of this debate, the preliminary time to it, there should be somebody who says, nobody here qualifies to participate in a debate. You don't know what the heck you're talking about. And you are boring. You're dull and boring, and you are not serving the informational needs that we need at this time. So go away and save yourself some more embarrassment. That's what we need to say. Simply because you show up and occupy a seat doesn't mean that you are relevant. If you have nothing important to say, get out. Go away. We will find a way to live without you. Thanks, Paul, for your call today. I know I don't sound like I'm thankful, but I am. I am. We need to trust that we know enough about what we need and who can't meet the need. We need to trust that. There's no rule that says we have to live with this person or live with that person simply because they show up for something they're calling a debate. There was no debate. It's a bunch of people getting together to satisfy themselves that they are important and should be paid attention to, even though they have nothing to say. They have nothing relevant to say. And the as they used to say in the neighborhood, they're styling and profiling. We're done with that. You either have something relevant to contribute or you don't. If you don't, just pack up and get out. Go home. Do something far more. Go walk the dog. But stop wasting our time. We will not tolerate people wasting our time like this. And we have to let them know. It is a disservice and it's an insult when you devote 90 minutes of your time at the end of the day, when you could have done one thing to improve your condition, like soak your feet, your tired, aching feet. That would have been a preferable thing to do. Instead, we're looking to these people from whom we get nothing relevant to our future or even our current situation. How do we live through this situation that we're in? What is the plan? If you have nothing to say to that matter, don't come to this kind of arrangement thinking that we will believe you when you say you're interested in a debate. You don't know how to debate. There ought to be a school. You ought to be sent to a class to learn how to debate. And until somebody is satisfied that you have the basics down pat and you know why you're there and how to convey your thoughts to people and how to argue your point, you have no relevance in my life. We have to make these kinds of tough decisions. 888-874-4888. We still have some time for additional calls before we say goodbye today. But you see, this is the thing. We've tolerated underperformance for so long. It is so normal that we have average and less than average people in positions of controlling our lives every single day. And what they're doing is playing games. We don't have the luxury of playing games. We are involved every single day, every hour of the day. We are involved in making something of our lives. We don't have time for this nonsense. They are situated in such a way, it's obvious. You know, they have money, some kind of money in the bank. They have an assurance of earning even more money. They have status. They have exposure. And therefore, they have this thing now because it's all now Hollywood. You ain't nobody, as they say. If you stay in office late at night trying to get the people's work done, you're just a jerk. You're just a dummy. Get out there and posture. Get out there and invent a reality that really does not exist. And ignore the reality that people are literally scrambling with every single day. I, for one, I'm sick of it. Because you can't look to them for leadership. You can't even look to them for honesty. Just say, well, I don't know how this is going to work, but this is what I have in mind. This is what I think we can do. But this is not a solo flight. There are things that require partnerships. But the politics of today encourages solo flights. you're on your own. You're doing your thing. And everybody has to live with the consequences of your actions. You don't need anybody monitoring you at all. Because, you know, you're important. And then you listen and you keep listening because you're sure they're going to, at some point, they're going to get to the point and they will realize how off course they are in terms of what you're expecting or the people are expecting and the best that they can do, which is not good enough. So it's a sales job. They're there to sell us the idea that they deserve to be there. And we should believe that because that's what politics is all about. You create a fiction and then tell people it's a reality. I'm not for that at all. Not for that at all. So my feeling is, and I see that we have some people saying the same thing today, that was an embarrassment. Anybody from any nation that is dealing with the same things, how do we as a nation survive? How do we deal with the challenges of life? Anybody from a country like that watching this program could just say, you know, I'll blow the candle out. I'll blow this candle out because it is useless to think that, you know, you can get anything higher, any greater vision from what we have. It's not happening. So we have to come to terms with it. That's the extent of our leadership. That's what we are saddled with. The question is, do we accept that? Or do we plan on something else as leadership? That's our charge now, and we should take it very seriously. Thanks so much for calling in and expressing your thoughts today and sharing your ideas. And we continue to do that. We reinforce each other in the things that we can do, the things that are within our power to do and accomplish. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.